Hey everyone, we're back. As I say, don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years, and we have been here for years, just not doing podcasts, but for a long time. Hey, we're the Breakpoint Show. There's Khalid. There's Martin.
Hello.
I'm Woody. We're the hosts. It is August 3rd, so it's the day before.
It's May 3rd, Chris, May 3rd. Not August.
Sorry.
We can't lose all these months already.
May 3rd. May 3rd.
Stop living in the future. Stop living in the future.
So I'll be the first to say May the 4th be with you. So tomorrow is Star Wars Day. So watch a Star Wars movie. I actually was watching Rogue One last night, which honestly is probably one of my favorite Star Wars movies. It might be my favorite Star Wars movie. That's my controversial take for the day. That Jeez. Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie, even though you know what is going to happen at the end, right?
Yeah. Although only Siths talk in absolutes, Chris, so I'm worried about you.
Oh, well, it is to me. But no, I'm saying it's my favorite Star Wars movie.
All right. I agree. I like it. I really like that movie, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think it's really good. I think I love the blind kind of monk in it.
Yeah. Donnie Yen. Yeah. Donnie Yen is good.
He's a great actor. But yeah. he was my favorite character in that movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? If this podcast episode has started out being boring, that's the topic of today's talk, or kind of today's episode, is boring tech. Like, what's involved in a lot of software that we build is boring. I mean, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about all the boring stuff that developers have to do day in and day out. So Martin brought the topic up. So I'm going to hand it off to him because I think he can shed some more light on it.
Yeah. So the main thing that I really want to do in the coming months is that I need another talk title and topic for submitting to conferences and so on. And I'm a big fan of boring technology, just things that work, that are not the new and shiny and so on. And I'm thinking about submitting a talk that is about exactly that topic. Like, do you actually need a Kubernetes cluster? Do you need AI? Do you need all of the shiny, fancy new frameworks and everything? Or can you just go with boring technology to build exciting tools and products? Mm-hmm. So that's the main takeaway, or the main premise of the talk that I want to give. Now, the question is, what would you consider boring technology that is very effective? And that might just work for many, many software solutions out there.
Yeah. I guess we could start with you're right. Like what is boring? Like if you look at a technology, what classifies as boring? For me, boring has always been predictability. Like knowing you're going to use something, understanding what it's going to do. And then also when it fails, understanding what the failure state is. So there's never any surprises. And I think with newer technology, it's not just the tech, it's our understanding of it. When things go bad, we're like, oh my God, well, what do we do here? Right? So that non-boringness, that excitement typically occurs in production when everything is on fire and people are calling you in the middle of the night. And that's the kind of excitement you don't want. You want boring tech so you can get that good 8 hours of sleep at night.
Yeah. You know what? I've said this for years. I don't see the benefit of trying new things just for the sake of trying new things. Mm-hmm. I mean, like if there's a really good new library out there that does something, sure, explore it, mm-hmm. look at it, test it, build some proof of concepts around how your team could use it or your tech organization, but just don't throw something into a new project at work just because it's the new shiny thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many people that do that. I mean, take a look at how many JavaScript libraries there are, and there's always a JavaScript library that comes out, and then a new one comes out 2 months later, and people are always chasing the new and shiny things. I feel that happens in certain communities.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, that doesn't. Our community, .NET community, is a little more different. We chase after things that are just given to us by Microsoft.
Ooh, hot take. Woo.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, if you don't agree with me, you can hit me up on social media and tell me why I'm wrong.
All right, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, But yeah. But boring is good. I mean, I like what you said, Khalid. Boring is good. If something doesn't break because it's been around for a long time. And you know what? I'll say in our community, there's lots of things that Microsoft brings out that we use over and over again, and Microsoft stabilizes it and adds lots of new versions. Mm-hmm. So it's a hot take that we always kind of gravitate to things that come out of Microsoft. But on the other hand, Microsoft is actually pretty good about, for the most part, keeping most big projects for .NET alive and building and fixing them and making them stable. So they become kind of boring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is, however, one thing that I think is a bit of a flaw in how we consume all of that technology, and that is that we don't stick long enough with that technology that is becoming more boring and so on. So I have a really nice example from last week. I think, Khalid, you and I talked about this on our internal Slack. So at the situation where I was implementing an autocomplete for a web app that would do an AJAX request, fetch data from the database, do a query to get some information, send it back, and then show an autocomplete form. So the naive way of building that in the past was using SQL and using a like statement, mm-hmm. which we all know is probably going to break down at some point given the number of records that you're searching through and so on. But for a low amount of number or a small number of items that are in there, it wasn't really that bad in terms of performance. Fast forward a couple of years later for this application, that was actually starting to break down because of many records that are there. So how do you go about solving that? And Khalid, you can attest to this. I reached out to you complaining about the fact that Lucene.net on NuGet was over 2 years old. There's Solr, same situation there. I also found another library that did full text search and so on. And I was thinking, ooh, nice, I can use this one. But other suggestions that people gave me were use Redis, use Azure Search, use whatever is out there. And I have been trying with that third-party library to build a full text index and so on. And then I was thinking, wait a minute, good old boring SQL Server has full text search. So I enabled the full text search index, which took me 2 minutes to look at the documentation on how to do that again. Changed my query to use the contains function, which triggers full text search on SQL, and boom, everything was fast, up and running, no issue at all. So just using boring technology, my Azure bill didn't go up or anything. In fact, it's probably lower now because I'm consuming fewer resources than with that like statement. So I think there's a lot of shiny technology, and we all want to work with microservices and have that Azure search and maybe run it in multiple geos so that you have failover and redundancy and everything. But are you going to need that all the time?
Yeah. Push it up into CDNs and get it. Well, I mean, the biggest one is what were you using to return in .NET? Were you using a IEnumerable or were you using an IQueryable? Because an IEnumerable, the search, everything gets sent back to the client and your filter happens there. IQueryable, the search happens over in SQL Server. So right there, if you aren't, even if you use a contain, I'm curious if you use a contain and it returns an IEnumerable or what happens.
So I was definitely materializing everything coming from SQL, and actually in the query was limiting my result set to only 20 items because it makes no sense to show more things in an autocomplete in terms of the data that comes back.
So you're taking
all of the querying and filtering was on SQL Server, but just switching to full text made the performance so much better at no extra cost, and I don't have to learn new technology. I don't have to make sure that I have other dependencies in my project. The only thing that I did was enable a full text search index.
So you were using contain and you were using top? Like, like doing a top to say only return, like the return the top 20,
exactly.
20 values, results. Oh, that's really smart.
You know what's interesting about what Martin just said, though? It's like, you know, like a characteristic of boring tech is it has time to mature and it's quietly getting better when you're not paying attention to it, right? And I think that's like a very interesting characteristic of boring tech. Like just to use the example Martin was using, which is like SQL Server, like SQL Server now has like JSON support. It has array columns. I think it does, or maybe I'm just imagining it, but I think it does. I'm gonna say it. Correct me in the comments.
Someone will correct you.
SQL Server just keeps getting better, and I think it's out of its nature of being boring, reliable. That team has an opportunity to make it better. You know, something that's also related to SQL Server in the .NET space is Entity Framework Core, which every time I see it, it keeps getting better and better and better, and it has that time to mature. So, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
And that's why I was saying about Microsoft, they do have a lot of things that they do that they just let mature and get really, really good. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's some stuff that they kind of bring out new projects over and over again to try to fit and try to meet the community needs. But for the most part, a lot of their stuff is pretty good, like JSON. I mean, JSON is just working with JSON is getting a lot better over the last like 10 years in .NET. So there's another one that I feel has been kind of stabilized and improved and stuff. But yeah, I mean, the other thing I always view as boring are things that no one wants to do and they try to do at the end, which is like logging and monitoring, reports, what else? Just those things that you really should be looking at in the beginning, mapping out, but tests. People don't. Testing. You need
test. Testing. To do handle exception.
Error handling. I mean, as an architect, those are things that I think about from the very beginning, because if you don't build your foundation, if you don't build your systems on a good foundation, they're just going to fall apart. And you can't put error handling and you can't put logging at the end. You can't just jam it in at the end and think that it's going to be a stable result. Put That's in the true. Beginning, make it part of like the beginning and make it boring, like work it in to the foundation. And if you do that, you can usually you forget about it after a while because it's just there doing everything.
So here's a question for you guys in relation to what Chris, you were saying, like, why, you know, we're talking about boring technology, but developers have this habit. The majority of developers have this habit. I'm gonna just blanket everybody into this. Yeah. So, but the developers have this bad habit of being very excited for the first 80% of a task/project. And then once you kind of understand what you need to accomplish for the next 20%, which is typically boring, like why do you think developers fall into that bad habit, and how do you think they can kind of like break it?
Well, I mean, they fall.
You do what everyone does, right? You adopt new technology for just that 20% and go with it.
Maniacs. You guys are maniacs. What are you talking about?
You could say, why don't developers write good documentation? I'm giving a blanket statement too, because I don't know very many developers that I've worked with. And I will point the finger at me also by saying, I don't like writing documentation, but I do it because I know that it's the right thing to do, but it's boring. It's not exciting. And
But how do you turn that switch in your head to like push through the boringness of
that? It's just discipline and knowing that you just have to do, sometimes you have to do the boring stuff to get a good product or project or a solution that someone else is going to use. And you have to remember, you're not the only person on this. So I always say, you know, I'm dealing with a project right now that has been around for a couple years, and every developer that has developed in it has used their own standards and their own kind of patterns. Mm-hmm. And no one, so you get into the project and you're like, oh, okay, so there's nothing cohesive. So that's the other thing is as a team, building standards and building, I don't use best practices. I use recommended ideas or recommendations. You build that common way of that everyone's going to do something. And if someone comes in new, you teach them how to, and you have the documentation to show them how to do things the right way for that team and that project.
Sounds so boring though,
Chris. Oh, it's so boring. But we get paid really good money.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're going to have to just do the boring stuff. Like people that build houses, like they do boring stuff. Building wall, like, trust me, putting drywall in is tough and it's boring.
Yeah.
Like, but you have to do it.
Yeah.
You have a house.
Well, okay. Let me ask you, I'm going to ask Martin something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're focusing on your talk about boring technology, right? Is there a recent boring technology, by the way? If somebody can count how many times we say boring in this episode, please.
That's going to be a very boring task to do.
Yeah, that would be very boring. But I'll give them a Starbucks gift card if they tell us how many times it's boring, either in the comments on YouTube or let us know on like social media or something.
I'm curious now. But Martin, is there a boring technology that you've recently rediscovered that maybe isn't so boring like you thought it was and actually is really exciting and kind of like reaffirms your love for that thing, right?
I would say it's SQL Server full text search for one. but the other one, I'll probably start with an anecdote from 20 years ago when I was in my last year studying for IT and development and so on. I was working at a company there who had a site generator or a CMS to build their entire website and so on. And that had a really, it was all on the desktop. You would have rich text, you could add images and so on. And when you were done editing, you would click a button. It would generate HTML files and images and so on. And they would upload that using FTP to a server and you would have a website up and running somewhere. And at the time I was thinking like, why would you not use an actual proper content management system that had dynamic rendering and so on, where you could just add everything on the fly, click save, and your new page would be up and running or your edited page would be up and updated. And it's only been recently, a couple of years ago, when I rediscovered static site generators as something that is actually quite interesting. Because if you run WordPress or Drupal or whatever CMS you want to run, you need an actual web server that has CPU cycles to spend on every request that comes in. You have to have a database that serves up everything. If you have a high traffic website, you probably want some caching. Maybe you want to have a database cluster so you don't have just one single point of failure and so on. So there's lots of things that come up. And that static sites generator from 20 years ago would just spit out HTML and CSS and images. You would upload them to a CDN and you can scale pretty much until infinity.
Yeah.
And that is super boring because you're just generating HTML, but it's really cool because it's actually very scalable.
I'm gonna take credit for corrupting Martin with static site generation. You said 2 years ago. That's about the time we ended up rewriting our guide to use a static site generator.
I think it was probably when I moved my blog from WordPress to Jekyll.
Oh, all right. Okay, cool. Still. Yeah. I use Jekyll, so I'm taking all this credit for Martin. It's fine.
Yeah, like on my
you can have it.
Networking on the networking book that I'm writing for C# and .NET that uses a static site generator called Retype. Mm-hmm. And it just uses a YAML, has a YAML file to have all the metadata. And then all the documents in as Markdown, and it basically just takes all your Markdown and generates your HTML, and you get this nice site that you can put your content. And so, mm-hmm. Static site generators are awesome. I mean, that's really all that we had back in the early to mid 90s. There wasn't
if you think of it. Every history repeats itself because you would have static websites and then you would have your CGI bin folder that would have one piece of logic, which usually was something like a mail form that would take HTML input and send it to an email address. Yep. And that was your serverless of that age or of mm-hmm. that era.
Yeah, I was watching. I keep tabs on the static site Jamstack community and it's telling because a lot of the hosting companies, they don't really make a lot of money off of static hosting. They make money off of functions as a service and dynamicism. Excuse me. So it's like, while static site generation is pretty cool and probably serves 90% of the folks out there, it's actually not good business. So there's always this conflict between boring technology that works and businesses needing an income to survive.
Right? You know, it seems to me that static site generation really happened when GitHub released GitHub Pages. Mm. And static site generation just blew through the roof because people could go, oh, I can create a website off of this repo. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cost me anything extra. It basically, I have a second branch that contains the website. The main branch has all the content that uses to get generate the static website, and it's boring. And mm-hmm. that is great for 80% of stuff that we post on the internet. Do you need anything other than static web pages?
I would argue no.
No.
So Chris, same question to you. Is there you're working on a project with team members? Is there a particular technology that maybe you took for granted that you're kind of rediscovering that is boring, but is also like you're thankful for that it exists and that it's reliable and you can set your watch to it?
So I'm writing a chapter right now. So mm-hmm. the current chapter I'm writing is chapter 6. It's error handling and fault tolerance in networking programming. And I haven't used this library in years. And actually, it just came out with a new version. So I'm learning the new version, and that's Polly.
Mm-hmm.
So Polly is this library that allows you to have fault tolerant code. So it has things like retry, fallback, default handlers. So things that like if you're writing a client that hits an API, what happens if you don't, if after 5 retries, or well, how do you retry? I mean, for the most part, I wonder if people are even retry, like even using a retry pattern mm-hmm. or scenario. Or what happens if you reach the number of retries and you have to fall back to something?
Yep.
So it's boring. So
boring.
But it's boring, but for me, it's that space that separates good developers and great developers.
Mm-hmm.
I think here's my take. I think great developers do the boring stuff and mm-hmm. are excited about the boring stuff and push to do the boring stuff as well as the exciting stuff.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's like, it's definitely for me to break through that last 20%. It's like you need to find the excitement in that 20%. And the way I typically do it is talking to your stakeholders and visualizing them being happy to use your software and your solution. And that to me can be really re-energizing. For us, like we're talking about technology today, the hyper focus on the cool tech, new and shiny, once that shine wears off, yeah, it's hard to find the excitement in it once you kind of get acclimated to it. So for me, looking at the people you're serving, the solution you're trying to provide, and looking outside of tech could kind of help re-energize you to complete that last 20%. And I think you're right. Like that's where great developers are made, like people who can change their perspective to understand what they're trying to accomplish. So
yeah,
it's very cool. I'm going to answer my own question though. Like what kind of technology have you recently rediscovered? And by the way, people listening, if you have a certain technology that you've recently discovered,
that would be super interesting.
Yeah. Please leave in the comments. Cause I'd love to learn stuff. So,
yeah,
but for me, one of the cool technologies that has really made a resurgence that I think people kind of be surprised about, I'm going to say HTML. The work that has been put into HTML to add new elements, to support things like web components, the stuff they're doing with CSS right now, all these like web technologies that are kind of foundational to building web experiences, they've really all had these glow ups that I think are worth going back to and looking at because, in our old man brains, sometimes our experience can kind of like set an expectation for a particular technology. And just because that technology has carried the same name over years, it doesn't mean that that technology is the same as it was 10 years ago. So yeah. I'd love to just do a whole episode on where HTML is and some of the exciting things that have happened in HTML since.
Yeah. I'll give a plug.
Yeah.
I'll give a plug to another podcast that I really enjoy listening to. It's called Syntax.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been talking about like web components and talking to people about like getting things out. So there's a project called Web Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they are working with the W3C or to try to get a lot of these web components that they build to just be part of the HTML standard, because it would take away all like a lot of their tedious work, a lot of their boring work, and let them do kind of the exciting stuff. So it's really interesting. And then they also talk about like trying to do more in CSS, which I have mixed feelings about that. I think you're just taking the complexity from JavaScript and moving it into CSS, which is already a complex, the magic that people can do with CSS, I don't truly understand. That's just me. But
you're all hot takes today, Chris. It's wild.
It is. I'm
burning always, up over here.
Yeah, it's a Friday, so I love this whole rediscovery of HTML. And then I discovered this interesting blog post the other day that talked about REST and saying REST shouldn't return JSON because REST is the guy who coined REST in his thesis.
All right, I'm going to go look this up. Keep talking, Chris. I'll find it.
So I should know the guy. I should go know the gentleman's name. And if he does listen
to that. It's not Jason.
It's not Jason. But the whole premise of this blog post was REST is used against HTML. And it should return back HTML and not return back JSON. JSON is just a transport. Because think about it. Today, when you have a client that calls an API, what happens? You call the API, you get JSON back, which what do you do with the JSON? You convert the JSON into HTML, and then you show the HTML through you push that out to the DOM, and it gets shown on the web page. So why not just return the HTML from the API and bypass all the heavy lifting that you did with converting the JSON into HTML?
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
And why not pre-generate that entire API and then you end up with a static website again?
True, exactly.
You are right, though. And the things you're talking about are definitely conversations happening in the web front-end community, which is server-side rendering is this boring technology for JavaScript folks. And they're rediscovering that a server can essentially cut a lot of the work. You know, especially when you're dealing with boundaries between client and server, you don't have to worry about transporting data that you need to display on the UI, but doesn't necessarily get presented to the user. So we're all kind of rediscovering things that, like Martin said, are potentially old, but they're still useful ideas and helpful ideas. By the way, Roy Fielding wrote the dissertation on Rust.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, no. I googled it.
I should know Roy's name. I use his ideas all the time. So
you should get a tattoo that says Roy Fielding. Then you'll never forget. Your wife might not be happy, but you'll never forget.
Yeah. But but that when I read that blog post, I was like, it blew my mind. I was like, yes, that's correct. I mean, it's because so many people are using JavaScript, and why not use less JavaScript and leverage HTML and CSS, but primarily just leverage HTML coming from the server.
You know, you do make a good point in terms of, like, there's the opposite side of the coin where we think something is boring, so we continue believing our experience and we continue to follow something we believe might be true. And we're kind of doing ourselves a disservice, right? Like in this case, it's like, you know, spa applications came out of this idea that like browsers were slow. They take a long time to process the DOM. It's a bad user experience. Why not just shuffle pieces of data back and forth and only change the things in the UI that are actually affected by that state change, right? So that's where spas really came out of. But since that time, browsers have gotten a lot faster. The DOM parsing and manipulation is really amazing and flexible and capable in a lot of browsers. And internet speeds have gotten so fast that the difference between 1 kilobyte data transfer and 4 kilobytes, which is, I think, typically the packet size, is really not that much coming across the wire. And we have new protocols. So yeah.
Even on mobile devices, our phones, we have the network pipelines are, we have network speeds on our phones that we didn't have in our houses 10 years ago for the most part.
Yeah. So if you think something is boring and it doesn't warrant your time, maybe you should kind of shelf that idea and go look at something you think is boring just to maybe rediscover something that will be exciting. So, I mean, on this note, since we're kind of getting close to time, Martin, like, you're trying to come up with this talk. What would you want people to take away from your talk as kind of like a final note?
I think we touched on a lot of things, and I think a lot of it's essentially goes back into, we all are chasing the new shiny, which is a good thing because that's how progress happens and we all evolve and so on. But we also don't stick long enough with technology to actually see all of the silent improvements that come with it. I think static site generators, there is a perfect example that took maybe 20 years before that became apparent that it's a good thing. And who on earth is going to stick around for 20 years with some technology? But still, it's cool to see that happens. And I think a main takeaway would be for people to not always think about the new shiny as the first thing that would solve the problem that they are trying to implement. And second of all, also give the existing technology that is there a second chance, maybe if you're on an existing project, and look into what the silent improvements are. And maybe stick with boring because it works and it actually drives value for your business or your project that you're building.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great.
Very good.
I say we end right there. Martin, that was a great ending. So we're going to wrap up. If you have your own ideas around boring, let us know. Go out, subscribe. I always forget to say that in the beginning of the show, but subscribe to our show if you're watching this on YouTube, or give us, like, find us on the internet. we're all over the show has social media, and we all do. So find us on the nets. But I just wanted to say thank you, Khalid, and thank you, Martin, for this boring conversation.
Thanks, Chris. So, are we just trying to increment the number of borings for this?
Yeah, boring. Just keep saying boring. We need someone to count all these borings. Yes.
So whoever gets the total number of borings, will get a Starbucks card. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye. What do you guys want to say?
Yep. Bye. Boring. Bye.
Bye. Sneak it.
See ya.